8:34, we call this finance meeting to order. Currently present is Council President Nagel, Council Persons, Kilpatrick, Sheldon, Bell, Hollins, Cartier, Weiner, Diller, and Councilman Smalley, Co-Chair of Finance, and Ms. Fagan will be taking the minutes. What's your pleasure on the minutes of the April 11, 2017 finance meeting?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, with that, if we could have Ms. Rivers step up to the table, candidate for appointment to, and I would turn this over to Councilman Diller, if you'd like to comment.
Yes. Ms. Rivers is an executive appointment to the Board of Adjustment, and she has been attending Board of Adjustment meetings to see how things work. She comes with a really amazing background. She was an attorney in Nigeria. She is now here. She's working with a nonprofit organization that offers services right now to foster children, but you are also moving into helping schools, children in schools, and you've done some work at Ferris as well. So she comes with, I think, a real concern for the community and is willing to serve, and I think you will be very impressed with her background.
I'm not sure if Councilwoman Diller has left anything for you
to say.
If there's any comments you'd like to make to council, today is council day. We have several meetings, so if you could help us with some words of wisdom, I'm sure it would be
all I have to say is that she's right in everything she said, and I have attended at least 3 meetings, and I'm a very curious, inquisitive person. I like to know things, and it's been interesting attending the meetings. So I think I have a hang of what the board is all about already. And working in the community, I've worked with a lot of disadvantaged people, I've worked with regular people, and I think I'll do a great job being on the board. I'll be an addition to the board.
Any questions from any members? Councilman Weiner.
I just want to make a comment that I'm pleased as well. I'm Bob Weiner. I represent the area north of Wilmington. I'm very pleased that you're willing to serve. When I went to Temple Law School, we had an exchange program with Nigeria, both our judiciary and our bar association. So I had a chance to have some of the judges from Nigeria as a guest lecturer. And it's been a few years, so I can't remember their names, but I just want to tell you I was very impressed with their skillfulness as teachers and as judges as well. I'll commend you to review both the substantive and procedural law. There's a case law, and you'll find that the basic standard of there's a panoply of cases that can support decisions that appear to be on the line, but you are our equitable relief. The safety valve, with strict application of the law, could create an undue hardship. And so your lifetime experiences as well as your legal acumen will bring a great skill set to the board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, my members of council? Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you at the Board of Adjustment.
Thank you very much. Excuse me.
Councilman Street is present. I'd like to make a motion to go out of order to hear the presentation on the Newcastle County Pension Plan by Mr. David Boomershine. Our resolution 17078, which is next on the agenda, is relevant and related to this report.
Second.
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Mr. Boomershine.
Okay. Hi again. It's nice to be back. Thank you for having me. Thank you for your time today. We have the presentation up on the screen, and just as always, as I go through the relative issues from the pension valuation, if you have any questions, just stop me. We'll take the discussion wherever you want to go.
Let the record show Councilman Powers is with us before the presentation begins.
Okay, here's an overview of what I'm going to talk about. Basically, I want to go through some background issues, that we have for evaluation. We have the four primary inputs that go into our evaluation model or process. And we project down to the future, bring out everything back to the present, translate it into liabilities versus assets, and what they determine what the annual cost is. The four inputs are the employee census data, the assets of the plan, the actuarial assumptions that we use for the projections, and also the provisions of the plan. Okay, that's better. So, talking about the employee census demographics. What we have here is a list of all the numbers of participants from each of the plans, the actives, the terminated vested employees who have future benefits, retirees, and disabled. If you just go down to the right-hand column, you'll see to the corner here, we have 2,544 plan participants this year versus 2,550 participants last year. So it's just a slight bit lower. And if you, as you go across the bottom, you see we have the total number of actives is 1,092. That was 1,106 last year. So it was a little bit more last year. The number of terminated vested participants was 88 last year. The number of retirees is about the same, about 1,308 versus 1,310. That doesn't mean that we didn't have new retirees. It's just that we had some come as new retirees, and unfortunately some died and stop receiving benefits. So what we really see here is the total number of retirees at 1,300 is more than the number of actives at 1,100. Same as it was last year. We have more retirees than we have actives. It's telling us that the plan is maturing, just like all government plans across the country. So this is not a surprise. So what we see here is no surprises at all, but we do have a mature plan, and we want to pay attention to that as we go forward. Plan assets. Market value of assets actually went down a little bit this past year, $405 million down to $402 million. The investment return was 4.11%. Now that's less than the 7.5% assumption that we use. So we're going to see some actuarial loss there, which indicates some increase in costs as we go forward and see in a few more slides.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. Councilman Weiner.
Yeah. In the bull market, I understand you say there's extra costs, but could you explain why there's a drop in market value during this year?
Actually, let me come back to that in a couple of minutes. There's a slide that shows you ins and outs.
Okay.
Okay? So that'll make it much more clear. The actuarial value of assets did go up from 420 to 427 million, or a return of about 7%, still less than the 7.5% assumption. Now, what the actuarial value represents is that we take the investment gains and losses each year and spread them out over 5 years. So it's taking away some of that volatility, the market value of assets jumping up and down, and smooths it out so that we don't have so much volatility in the annual cost for you when we get to that. So the actuarial value over the market value is about 106%. That's within the corridor that's acceptable. And then down below, we show the 5-year average investment returns. The market value at 6.7 and actuarial value at 6.8% over the past, averaged over the past 5 years, still below the 7.5%. And I'll come back and talk about that too. This is just showing the expected return for the past 5 years versus the line at 7.5%. You can see we were over for a couple of years, we've been under for the past couple of years. And on the 5-year average, we're a little bit under. Also showing the return, the assumed return, 7.5% is the line, but also showing where the Newcastle plan, the green bars, are versus market indices, equity, fixed income, and so on. And as expected, the green bars are somewhere in the middle of all the indices that we see here, as expected. So here's the page I was talking about, showing the ins and outs on a market value basis, so how we got from 405 down to 402 million. So we have the contributions, both employer, employee, the realized income of 6.5 million, total income of 26 million. There's also unrealized appreciation of about 12 million. So when you add the 12 and the 6.5 million, that's how you get to that 4.11% return. So So real dollars in, $26 million, but we also have a market value increase of $12 million. What I wanted to show here is that the $26 million income versus the outflow, the benefit payments and expenses, is at $42 million. So we have a net outflow of about $15 million before you look at the unrealized appreciation. So that's a negative cash flow without unrealized appreciation. That's a concern, but it's also symptomatic of a mature plan. So again, this is not a surprise, the fact that we have just a 4% return versus 7.5% return. That's the concern that we want to watch carefully as we go forward.
Gosham, Mr. Chair.
Councilman Warner.
Thank you. Certainly watching it carefully is important, but what is the pension board's plan to deal with this, given the anticipated growth of our retiree base who aren't contributing?
Okay. The growth of the retiree base is part of the valuation process. So we build that into our future values and bring it back to the present. So the fact that the number of retirees is going up is not a concern. The fact that we have a 4% and we, on the past 5 years, we've had less than 7.5% return, that's a concern that we have to watch. Because the 7.5% assumption we have is the key assumption in the actuarial valuation. So we are watching that. We talk about it with the pension board every year. I understand the pension board wants to look more closely at that 7.5. Should we start bringing it down?
Yeah.
And I should also talk about what's going on nationwide, too. Right now, the national average for that assumption, 7.5%, that is the average for the country. It's really more like 7.6. But it's also clear that whereas we're within what the current survey says, the survey also tells us the assumptions are going down. We talk to the investment consultants. We maintain a database of 30 investment consultants. We see what they're talking about. And when we talk with them, they say in the short term, we're expecting 6.5% return. Actuary doesn't care. We want to talk long term. When they run through their models on a long-term basis, they're still talking about 7.25%. In fact, the investment consultant for Newcastle, New England Pension Consultants, they ran through the model and they're predicting 7.2%. We ran it through our database of investment consultants and we see a prediction of about 7.25%. We talked about that with the pension board. The pension board, I know, wants to talk more about that. Should we be looking at lower assumptions?
So, following up, certainly understanding that the pension board wants to talk about it, but what are other pension boards doing about that? And looking at historically the length of this bull market, it's the second longest bull market in the last 100 years. So, it more statistically is likely a mature bull market where the lower number percentage of return is more likely to be a conservative number upon which fiduciaries should be basing their decisions. So other than talking about it, what are the discussions as to how they're going to adjust for this?
Okay, we don't suggest big changes, but we do suggest step changes. So what the discussion was at the pension board meeting was, we hear 7.5% returns, what about 7.25% returns? And one of the things that we always want to talk about is let's analyze it, know what the impact is, before you make a change for next year. So we did talk about 7.25% as the assumption for this. In fact, we actually have a projection model where we've done some projections on what happens, and I believe that the pension board wants to talk more about that. So it is a hot discussion right now, and I believe they want to talk more about it. And we've talked about this for the past several years, too.
Yeah.
We've talked about it every year with the pension board. So it is under discussion at this time.
And I guess you're going to explain what percentage is funded at some point.
Yes.
Okay, I'll leave that alone.
Councilman Sheldon.
If you lower that from 7.50 to 7.25 or whatever, doesn't your unfunded liability go up?
Yes.
And that's something you have to look at because a mm-hmm. lot of pension funds, that's why they don't go to it, let's face it. That's why mm-hmm. we don't. Because then you got to go to the members and say, we need money.
Yes.
And the other thing is any money manager ever been terminated from Newcastle County?
Oh,
a balanced fund manager?
I know it's been New England Pension Consultants for a long time. I honestly don't know. I think there were some firms a long time
ago. Ed, not working for the finance office. Yeah. NEPC is a pension fund consultant. They do bring in their managers for review and change the, who they invest with over time. If somebody's not performing, then they will terminate them and bring somebody else in to replace them. They do that review.
They do, yeah. Yes. And could we next time get, there's a Barclays 60-40, because that's what we are, 60-40.
Okay.
Instead of just having S&P, that's all stocks, and then having all Barclays government treasury bills, that way 60-40, that... If you don't hit that split, then after 5 years, I know Local One fired you. You were gone. That was just automatic. You were just, you had to hit those figures. And that's, they're 108% funded. So, I don't know. It might mean something there.
So, on this prior chart.
And plus, they had to give more money.
That's where you want to see 64.
I want to see, yeah, because okay. That's really the true benchmark, if that's what you're going for.
Good point. Okay, we will follow up on the next value.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, you had said on average there's 7.5.
Yes.
On nationwide government plans. Because that goes back to what both of them said. Is you're not hitting what the national average is.
Two, 3 years.
The assumption, the valuation.
Okay, you're saying assumption, but what has the national average been hitting?
Return wise,
yes,
it's been lower than that. It was around the 4.
But then why are you putting a benchmark so high? I know what he's saying, but it's still going to come back and bite you in the butt for long.
Well, no, in long term, what the investment consultants are saying is that we're going to earn 7 to 7.5%.
I deal with investment consultants on grain all the time. They don't know shit. So I'm just, doesn't mean I agree with consultants. They're not living
there.
Okay.
And you're not happy.
Very good.
I'll see that.
So when we do the valuation, we take valuation data, the demographic data, employee census data that's about a year old, so that we can finish the valuation earlier in the year. So we take census data from a year ago, roll it forward, compare it to the actual assets and contributions for the past year. So that's our approach. The valuation assumptions. We did an experience study back in 2012, 2013 to see how close your actual county experience was to the assumptions we were using. So the assumptions were adjusted back then. But the one thing I want to point out again is that at the top is the one that's the most important, 7.5%. And so we've done some analysis on 7.25% and we'll be doing more. So we will look to doing another experience study to compare all these assumptions versus actual experience. In a 5-year period, so in 2017-2018, we'll be doing another experience study to compare all these assumptions. Okay? So, let's start talking about the results. Here's the funded status. The actual liability this year is $570 million, which is up from $562 million last year. The actual value of assets is up to about $7 million. So one's up about $8 million, the other's up about $7 million. The unfunded actuarial liability, the mortgage that has to be paid off, goes from $141 to $142.5 million. So it's up $1.3 million actually. The funded ratio stays about the same. So it went from 74.9 to 75%, which is the national average for public sector plans. So you are at the average point for public sector plans. When we talk to bond rating agencies, they'd like to see that at 80%. So we still got some improvements that we want to achieve, again, on a long-term basis. But you are at the national average. And that's for an ongoing plan. The numbers down below are if you stop the plan now, the present value of accumulated benefits would be at $538 million. Market value is what we compare against for that at $402 million. That ratio is about 75% also. But that's jumped down. That ratio went down. Just because the market value goes down. So it's showing the volatility. But the numbers up above are the key ones for an ongoing plan.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Councilman Warner.
Thank you. obviously, the strategy for any fiduciary pension board would be to reduce the mortgage in bull market years and let that help you ride over the bear market years, which they always come one after the other, the cycles. We had a history over the last 10 years of not taking advantage of the bull market at a percentage that we should have, and I realize that adjustments have been made. I've been to a few of the pension board meetings, and that's good. This pension board is paying attention. When you say 80% is the goal, I'd heard 90%. Is 80% the goal?
I've actually done some presentations before bond rating agencies.
Okay.
And what they will say, the three main ones, they will say a healthy pension fund is one that has an 80% funding ratio. They really only, and Moody's paid a lot of attention, came up with a whole new analysis. Mm-hmm. The end result of the analysis was that 2% of the plans are potential employers that would be gained. And their funding ratios are at 60%. That's when they get concerned.
Right.
So they're not concerned at the average. They'd like to see you at 80%. They'd like to see you doing something about the retiree medical, the OPEB stuff. But this is okay.
So you say we're average.
Yes.
Do you know what the median and mean is, what the spread is statistically?
The mean is 75%.
Okay.
The median is very close. I don't know exactly. The survey we saw is different with averages. So, but you're right there.
And what a final question. What how significant or insignificant is the differential between 80% and where we are in terms of the size of our pension?
In terms of the
adjustment that we need to make to close that gap.
Yeah, it's just some increase in the employer contribution to close the funding.
The employer contribution?
Yes. Well,
okay.
You can change plan designs and change employee contribution too.
Those are your variables.
The typical answer we see across the country is changing the employer contribution on a long-term basis, but what that has also been changing, the plan changes that we've really seen going on in the public sector, is new employees coming in, get a new plan, have a new employee contribution rate, which is exactly what the county did in 2011.
Well, we're not bringing in new employees and they're not participating in the pension program because we've done away with the 5% and the 2.5%.
But the new employees are coming into the 2011 plan, which is a lower cost plan and the employee contribution rate. And is also a hybrid plan, which also has a defined contribution part, like a 401k plan. That is helping to bring costs down. And in fact, the pension board has asked about that since 2011. What has happened with with the contribution rates? Are we recognizing savings? So we're waiting to hear back from the pension board whether they want us to do that analysis or not. So they're watching that too.
Thank you.
Council President Nader.
Can I have this presentation sent to my email?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'll get you an email.
Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
So, the next slide is just a bar graph showing the blue as the actual liability, the green the assets, the red the unfunded liability. You can see there's very little change from last year to this year, just a little bit relatively. So, looking at the annual contribution. There are two pieces of annual contribution, the normal cost, the value of the benefits that are accruing each year, and then the amortization payment paying off that unfunded liability. So the total normal cost is about the same, about $8 million. The employee contributions went down slightly, so that the net county normal cost is a slight increase, it's still around $5 million for a very, very small change. The amortization payments paying off that unfunded liability did go up. Again, assets went down a little bit, the unfunded went up a little bit. But just so you know, we are paying off that mortgage on a 20-year basis. So on a 20-year close basis, and so we pay a 20-year amortization of a new unfunded piece this year. It goes down to 18-year payments. That is a good funding approach. You're looking at closing off and paying off some of that unfunded liability each year. GASB rules, the Government Accounting Standard Board rules, allows you to pay that off over 30 years. A good funding plan is paying it off somewhere between 15 to 20 years. And again, you're starting off at 20 years and then knocking that down each year. Right now, this is about an average payment of about 17 to 18 years. And that's
a good funding approach in paying this off and taking that unfunded down. Okay, so the amortization payment goes up to about $14 million. The total is at $19 million. We take it to the end of the year because we're using this as a projection for the next fiscal year. And then we have the state subsidy that we're expecting will be around $2.5 million. It's actually $2.3 million, but this is at the end of the year figure. So we had a net total county contribution, net of the expected state contribution, at $18.4 million. Again, a small increase from last year. The percentage does go up a little bit from about 24% to 26%. But then we translate it into, we take out the crossing guards plan, we have the additional contribution coming in on the police plan, and the net percentage as a percent of payroll for the four primary plans went up from 24.3 to 25.7%. Increase about 1.4%.
Councilman Shelton.
So at the end of the year, we always come up to make the difference. Are you, is that, what line item would that be, the 18 mil for?
Make up the difference? What you're really doing is we take the 25.66%.
Right.
Apply that on to the payroll for covered employees throughout the year.
Right.
So it's the percent that's really the cost factor that's important for the county.
So if we don't hit a goal, that's the 25 or 26.23 or 25.66, I guess
yes,
it is. We have to hit that, and then whatever contributions are from employees and employers, we'd employer,
yep,
we have to make that difference off.
There's no difference. Once you make that, that's your contribution for this year. What we do is do evaluation next year to see, okay, what are the differences, the pluses and minuses, and adjust that percent as we go forward. If you pay that 25.66% this year against the covered participants' payroll, that's the county contribution.
Okay.
And the crossing guards and the... And
we're looking at $21,050,393.
It's in the resolution.
Oh, okay. I didn't read it.
No, I just figured, I just calculated that up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait. Good try.
So, okay.
For internal purposes only, we also look at this as a breakdown between the different plans. This is the different pieces of the plans that we developed to add up to the total. And you see the $18.4 million as the total contribution at the end, and the subtotal at 25.66%. For the four primary plans. And I say the four primary plans, that actually does include the county 2011 plan. So we should start calling that the five plans from now on. Although we know that a couple of them, like the alternate plan, are going to go away pretty soon. So those are the end results. So there is an increase in the percentage factor for this year. Also just want to touch on GASB. Again, the accounting rules are different. And we talked about that last year versus the funding rules. I've been talking about the funding rules on the side where we are at a funding ratio of 75% and the unfunded liability is $143 million. For accounting purposes, and again, I will mention, all of the accounting rules have been changed. And yeah, some of it makes sense, some of it doesn't make sense. And in my humble opinion, what GASB did is more confusing, which is frustrating to us in the actuarial field, because GASB's stated purpose is to make things clear on financial statements. Well, they just muddied the water. We now have two totally different sets of numbers, whereas we used to have one set of numbers, and you can see that you have to use market value of assets, the $400 million in the middle, versus the actuarial value of $427 million, and that causes the funding ratio for accounting purposes to go down. Now, again, I'll go back to the bond rating agencies. They care about the funding numbers. They know about the accounting numbers. They will follow them and will take them in, but they are concerned about the comparisons under the fund ratios. Okay. So then, in conclusion, the funding ratio is about the same. The factors that are causing the changes is a loss on the actual asset basis. We updated a couple calculations this year. So there is a small actuarial loss on the plan population, but the recommended contribution, the final total, the $18.4 million as a percent of payroll is going up about 2.5%, whereas the subtotal for the four plans, five plans, is going up about 1.4%.
And then the last couple pages are just the executive summary excerpt from our evaluation report that the pension board once asked us to include those. So we include those, but we've already covered all the pertinent information. And again, we have this new projection model that we're using that we'll be talking more with the pension board about, that we demonstrated some of the issues. And as we go forward, the initial projection that we have based on the current plan, the current assumptions, and we know that the current assumptions will not be realized in the future. There will be gains, there will be losses, there will be changes. But eventually, in about 20 plus years or so, the projections tell us that the funding ratio is going to go from 75 to 80, stay in the 80s for a while, eventually get close to 90%. It'll be in the 90% range. And we know that that will not happen. There will be changes, there will be variances.
In short, street level, exactly what goes into your calculation of the county's obligation? The number of retirees drawing? The revenue come from the actives, the investment revenue, and the projection for future retirees and future revenue. Am I missing anything? Is that what?
You mentioned retirees. Yeah. We also do it for actives. We take the actives and project them out on based on the assumptions until they retire. Take the once they retire out. So we're including the actives. There's even some terminated vested people that have future benefits, and retirees and disabled. So we take all of them and project them out in our model until they die. Take all that, bring it back to the present, and then translate it into the annual costs.
Okay. I have been hearing some earlier numbers that have been being relayed to me, and then I get this legislation. Did your projection change from an initial projection to the 25.63 and 25.66?
We did do some early estimates before the valuation was done. That's a process we go through with council. We do some estimating based on last year's valuation. So we do up some estimates. Then we finish the valuation and get these numbers, results.
So you do an early valuation based on last year's information with a projection to this year before you have the current information.
Right. Yeah. We add in the current information.
A concern I have, based on the past analysis, this is the projection for FY 2018.
Yes.
Has anything changed since this has been submitted? Will this hold?
This will hold.
This will hold.
We finished the full valuation report.
Not going to need any more. Yep. More money.
We have the valuation report about that thing. So this is it.
If I need any more money, can I send you a bill?
Yes.
That is on the record. Okay.
One more.
And Councilman Sheldon.
I haven't kept up the county plans, but is there a cost of living raise every year to the all county employees or just
yes.
specific groups? All county employees.
All county employees. There are two different cost of living increases. One applies to the 3% plan. I'm sorry, 5% plan.
Right.
5% plan, and that's a simple 2% increase per year. In other words, it's not compounded
right.
in the future. For the police, there is a test that is completed, and if the county passes the test, we pass it every year. There is a 3% compound COLA that's included for the police. Now, recognizing that's only counting the police that were in the plan up till 1995. After that, from 1995 on, all police, all other new hired police went into the state plan.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions from any members of council?
Okay, guys.
Public, Mr. Maxwell.
Brian Maxwell, Chief Financial Officer. When we were crafting the executive's recommended budget, the number we had at the time of a rate of payroll was 25.02, which is different from the 25.66. As Mr. Boomershein mentioned, there was some preliminary numbers that were shared with us, revised numbers after that. It seemed like the number was moving quite a bit, but we had to get a budget together to put out within time to meet the March 28th timeline. So the impact of the change from 25.02 rate of payroll to 25.66 is about $385,000 all funds, and the split between the two is usually 87% general fund, 13% sewer fund. So there will have to be an amendment to the recommended budget through the process that you guys will go through to add those additional funds, as opposed to amending the budget next year. I prefer to do it up front, as opposed to adjusting as we go through the next fiscal year.
No, I would agree, which means you have to locate the additional funds in order to amend.
That's correct.
The budget. Whereas if we waited, we would be utilizing those funds. So yeah, I mean, I think this council agrees. It's an obligation we have to meet, so we've got to pull that from wherever it has to be pulled now before we've been spending in the next fiscal year.
But I just want full disclosure
that's a shock. It's like seeing the big balance in the checkbook and then getting a statement in the mail, and there's difference. Right. Big difference. Right. $300,000+. Okay. Thank you very much. Any further questions from the public? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Let's work over here now.
How to order.
Need a motion to go back in the regular
business.
Okay. With that, we have R17078 to set the county's fiscal year 2018 contribution rate for the county's pension plans. I think we've had discussion on that, but this is any questions from any members of council? Okay, hearing none, move forward. Next is 17024. Let me clarify to council. 17024, 25, 26, 27, and 28 are all budget ordinances that will motion we made to table tonight. They will be discussed at the May 23rd finance meeting, as well as May 23rd when we hit the floor of council. Just give everybody kind of a heads up. My intent tonight will be to request all of these to be read in, placed before council, and then make one motion to table all of these, understanding that on the 23rd, they will all be brought back off the table individually, discussed individually, voted individually. But and for efficiency purposes, I have no problem either we move to table them all at one time. Any discussion? Any disagreement with that? So all of these will be discussed on May 23rd. Okay, next on the agenda is 17-030, amend the FY 2017 annual operating budget. Revise the Ethics Commission, appropriate $175,000 to provide for funding for contractual services. We were here last year with this issue, and unfortunately, not only for the budget, but for the Ethics Commission, it remains. There are still cases that are lingering from the election cycle to be finished up. And so this is the additional revenue that's needed in order for the Ethics Commission to meet their obligations. So any questions from any members of council? Councilman Street.
$175,000. I think it was a comparable amount last year. And I want to know who's getting all this money, who's making all this money. Who are they investigating? Who selects it?
Well, the Ethics Commission, but I yield to the attorney for the Ethics Commission.
Thank you.
And what's your rate?
Glad you asked those questions. This is Julie Sebring, Ethics Counsel for the Newcastle County Ethics Commission. I did prepare a little bit of information for everyone that goes directly, actually, to Councilman Street's questions. So, I'll pass these out.
Hopefully I have enough.
Make sure we have one for you. If we don't want to do this to you, make sure you have one for the record.
And in this packet, of course, the first item is just the resolution itself. But the second item is a chart that I put together that will show you about a 10-year historic perspective. on where the, how the costs are, it's complaints driven. The most expensive part of the many things that the Ethics Commission does, you need another, is the processing and working on complaints. And the complaints, the way the statutory process goes, is if a complaint is filed, then there's an initial determination as to whether the commission has jurisdiction over it. I do that. I am a contract employee I have a contract with the Ethics Commission. I'm paid by the hour. And in your packet, that's broken down. And then the next step would be, of course, the preliminary inquiry, which I do under statute for the Ethics Commission. Then it's presented to the Ethics Commission, then the 7-member volunteer citizen Ethics Commission will vote on whether this matter, the complaint, should go to a formal investigation. If there's enough to it there that there might actually truly be an ethics code violation involved, or more than one. Because sometimes complaints are simple because they're filed by one person and against one person. A lot of times there are a lot of players involved and a lot of different people and a lot of different issues, and so it's not always one equals one, but they're not always the same. Some investigations or complaints are pretty simple to work through. Others are very complicated and have a witness list of 20 to 25 people. And we've had several of those in the last couple of years. But then once it goes to formal investigation, then we have our, by contract, investigator, Ray Carr. You have my, I think you all know me, but you have my resume in there. I also put Ray Carr's resume in there. He's paid by the hour by contract, and he's paid $150 an hour. And then if the commission decides after formal investigation that the matter should go to what is called a probable cause report, it's sort of like an ethics commission indictment in very soft terms. Then after that, if the respondent under statute requests a hearing, then that respondent has a right to a hearing. At the hearing stage then, because under the statute, I as the lawyer representing the Ethics Commission may not do the prosecution, then we need a lawyer to do the prosecution. And you might be, and we have recently hired Brad Geyer. I put his resume in there as well, and he has agreed. His firm has allowed him to agree to do this work for $150 an hour, which basically in his firm is pro bono work. And as you probably know, a lot of times the contract outside counsel for county matters can get anywhere from $300, $400 an hour. And so I wanted counsel to understand that you are getting, and the taxpayers are getting, a good value for the money being spent in that contractual services line. But so what is especially, frankly, making me panic a little and us sleeping at night is, you look at the chart, you'll see that we have possibly 10 hearings that will be handled in 2017. Maybe some will fall into 2018. It's oftentimes hard to predict exactly when it's going to happen. But you will see from the chart, I didn't do a high-tech one, but you'll see that I just went back about 10 years, and you'll see that, you know, the typical year, maybe there are 3 or 4, maybe 5 complaints filed. And for the most part, they're dismissed fairly quickly, and then there's no carryover to the next year. And so you go through the last 8 years or so, and then you get to 2015, and things just sort of went crazy. We had 20 complaints filed in 2015. I think 14 of them carried over to the next year. Then we had 15 new ones on top of the 14 that carried over in 2016. Okay? And then this year, so far, we have 3 complaints filed. Is it four? Three or four. And but we still have 14 that are carried over from the last couple of years. So what's especially been interesting to me in looking back through this data is that in the entire existence of the Ethics Commission, which is 20 plus years now, they've had one hearing. One hearing. And we're about to do maybe 10. So when you wonder why there's a rather large number in the resolution that we're asking for, that's why. It's an expensive process. The commission normally just doesn't have the kinds of years that we've had in the last couple of years. I know I've spoken with some of you about this as part of my panic process, and that is that last year we were here about the same time. We called it an anomaly. Here we are again this year. Maybe it's a two-year anomaly. I don't know when exactly we look at it and say this isn't necessarily an anomaly anymore. I still believe it is, especially when I wish I could give you more information about this, but there are a lot of things I'm just duty-bound not to tell you. But I can tell you that the nature and the taxpayer money is not being spent on complaints that have no basis. The complaints that are currently pending and will go to hearing involve very real potential violations, innocent until proven guilty, but potential violations of the ethics code. There are no bogus complaints that last very long before the Ethics Commission. And it looks to me, if I can be so bold as to make a prediction, and it's like I'm just taunting the gods probably, and they might want to prove me wrong, but it looks to me like this year is shaping up to be more of a normal or typical year.
Yeah, unless there's a special election.
Well, you never know. It certainly can drive forces, put it that way. We have some frequent flyers that, where their names show up in more complaints and more processes than others, but that doesn't mean these aren't valid matters that need to be addressed by the county code and by the commission. And let me say, and I should have said at the outset, we do have some people here from the commission. Of course, we have Allison Lewis, who you probably have all talked to at least once or twice, and she's our confidential assistant. And then we have Sally Jensen, who's a commissioner. And we have, as of March, our newly elected vice chair, Paula Jenkins-Massey. And then, last but certainly not least, our new chair, as of March, Eric Monzo. And these folks, these commissioners, they consistently impress me and kind of put me in awe that people for no money and, no glory and no credit will show up for meetings that are hours and hours long to go through rather difficult situations and work on these things. And you folks have a wonderful group of people working for your Ethics Commission. And so I don't know if you had...
I just want to comment. I appreciate the work the Ethics Commission does. I know they serve a valuable duty to the citizens and everyone else in Newcastle County. And my comments to follow in no way impact my understanding of our responsibility fiscally to fund the Ethics Commission and carry out the duties that they're assigned. And I also recognize the confidentiality portions of it, the right of people to file their charges, but honestly and openly, it just frustrates the hell out of me that every other piece of government I can provide answers to when it comes to why I'm spending something, what the cost is. I know it's not going to happen. Again, nothing on you guys. You got nothing to do. But I would so love to be able to post this person versus this person, and here was the freaking price tag. Not saying it wasn't relevant. Not saying it wasn't right to file the charge. But the public know, yep, my tax dollars were spent to uphold right And here's the people that were involved in it, and here was the charge. It's just a shame they don't have a right to know, and that just frustrates me.
Well, there are jurisdictions that have ethics codes.
You're not the first one to suggest I go to a different jurisdiction. but I'm here for at least another couple of years.
That really wasn't my suggestion. But there are jurisdictions that don't have the confidentiality provisions, where everything that their ethics commissioner, what their regulatory ethics agency does, is all public. And if council wants our scheme or our code to handle it that way, you certainly have the authority to do that.
Tara, start tomorrow. Okay. Any other questions, comments from Councilman Reinhardt and Councilman Cardia?
Yes. I would like to take this opportunity to publicly thank those members that serve the public as members of the board. We are all beneficiaries of your public duty, sense of public duty. Thank you.
Councilman Cardia.
Yeah, I would also like to thank the members of the Ethics Commission that are here. You do a valuable service for our government. I think the citizens of this county want clean and ethical government, and it's your job under our county code, and that's the bottom line here. This is a function of county code, and you know, it's very fortunate that we have this situation where we have this volume of complaints, but I don't see any other way but to fund the process as it exists under county code. Otherwise, you know, why have an ethics commission? So I'm going to support this request tonight, and I hope other members of the council do the same.
Councilman Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo sentiments of my council members here and thank the commission for their volunteer service to Newcastle County. I have one question. When I look at these numbers here, of complaints, is this the fiscal year or calendar year?
Actually, this is based on calendar year. We do an annual report by code required, and the annual report is based on calendar year. And so it's hard sometimes to get the actual fiscal year numbers. I would have to literally go back into every file and figure out when, you know, whether it was June or July.
Now, this is fine. I just want to, when I'm looking at 2017, I'm looking at potential year. This year.
That's calendar year 2017. Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to join you, Councilman. I think that there should be a little bit more that we as council members should be able to quantify or qualify. We get a lot of questions and we always feel pretty handcuffed. I just handed you something today when I saw you. Now, how do I respond to this? I don't know if I can even ask you a question. So I think we do need to have some degree of openness about what's going on, even if it's just a matter of someone was found, whatever the case may be. I just think it's just a little bit too tight when we're spending these kind of dollars. I think we should have just a little bit more. I don't think we need to know everything, but right now we don't know anything.
Another thing that you may want to consider, in addition to perhaps making some of this information public, which would otherwise be kept confidential by the statute, is a duty to report. Because some of the things that come to the commission, there is a 5-year statute of limitations, which means you need to report it before it was 5 years ago that it happened. But there's no duty to report anything. And so we've had situations where people will file a complaint about something that happened 2 years ago, but now they're upset about it. And they weren't upset about it apparently when it happened. But under the code, the commission does not take into consideration the motive behind filing of it. And unless it's outside the 5-year limitation, if it's a valid potential violation of the ethics code, it goes forward, regardless of the motive behind it. So maybe if there was a duty to report and a shorter statute of limitations, the commission would be able to say, hey, you had 30 days or you had 2 months or whatever it might be to report this when it was happening and you didn't. And so, sorry, but there's not much the ethics commission can do about it now. Or maybe they could, it would be a shorter, like a shortcut process to it where they could just issue an advisory or something like that about it instead of it going through this very long and expensive complaint.
I plan on giving it some attention.
Yeah.
Councilman Weiner?
Yes, and I join my fellow council persons in that sense of frustration. Yet at the same time, I could foresee a scenario where making this information in part public actually fuels a political overlay that is otherwise avoidable by keeping it private. I'll leave it at that.
There are pros and cons, and I think that's why you find some jurisdictions are completely confidential in the process and some are completely open.
But let's clarify, as someone who had it done to them, the filing party is under no obligation to be quiet.
That's
no
true.
Obligation whatsoever.
The one person who can talk about a
matter
complaint
of fact,
under the code is the
on me, the aside from a few others that were filed, the day before the decision was coming out to exonerate me, a law firm here in the state filed suit against myself and this council and included that charge in their public brief. Because the next day the decision came out exonerating me. So they filed it the day before they knew the decision was coming out and already knew what the decision was going to be. But they were allowed to, I was to be silent, but they weren't. So it's only a 50% silence, and that's unfair. But it is the rule. Council President Nagel and then Councilman Tackett.
Yes, I want to thank the members of the Ethics Commission for your work, for doing it with no compensation whatsoever and volunteering your time, not only for this but for boards and commissions to, you know, on a moment's notice to get those done. I really appreciate it. And I personally, I don't think you're asking enough. I don't think you're asking a lot of money to do what you're doing, because this serves a really important purpose. Not only does it give someone who has a grievance in a venue in order to address a complaint, where it doesn't have to go public, where you know we can take care of it internally, where it's not in the in the court system, in the state court system potentially, or federal, we can take care of it here, and it gives the person that it is, you know, that is the complaint is about, an opportunity to clear themselves as well. I mean, there might be rumors and things out there, and they didn't do it, so it gives them an opportunity to clear their name, as well as to rein in those people that may be, you know, there may be a problem or a complaint. So I see it works both ways, and in the end, it's a very valuable service. And I think that you've done a lot with very little money, comparatively, in areas that we've spent in other areas and got very little or no return on. I'm very supportive of this. I think, you know, and the Ethics Commission, I think you've done a tremendous job. I know that you all put in many hours, and I doubt that you're even recording those hours, many of them. So I want to thank you for that, too.
Councilman Taggart and Councilman Kilpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I guess, you know, we're going to have to look to you many times, you know, because you are the watchdog over the county. The complaints do come to you, and you are the ones who, you know, ultimately review these. But, you know, we still have to be, you know, good fiscal stewards of this pot of monies that we have to oversee and all. So, you know, you made a lot of good suggestions, I think, there a few minutes ago, and that's something that I think that, you know, perhaps, you know, on a basis where, you know, the commission, you know, sees ways that we should be fine-tuning and doing things a little bit more often, perhaps, you know, make sure that's getting over to us so we can get it done and not wait too long, because, you know, if things are going to take, you know, all this money because of the length of time that it's taken and to get into it and you have to go out that much, it's something that we're really going to look to kind of curtail, because it's monies that we could, you know, perhaps add officers or do other things with, as opposed to, you know.
And I have been working on, when I first was hired in this position a couple of years ago, I started a redrafting of the ethics code, and then stuff happened, and I haven't had a heck of a lot of time to go back to that. I mean, it's a weird kind of position that I'm in at times, in that I want to do as much as I possibly can. At the same time, I want to be careful about how the money is spent. And so I spend most of my time putting out the fires and doing what's absolutely necessary, as opposed to maybe what would be nice. But maybe we're at the point where that's absolutely necessary.
General.
I plan on starting on it, and I will be in touch with the commission. Next, we have Councilwoman Diller, and then Councilman Powers.
Thank you. Just to go back to something that the president said, we handle these things internally, but my understanding is that if you find that there is a state law or federal law that has been broken in this, that you have to turn it over to those agencies.
Absolutely. There is a statutory duty of that. And in fact, 8 of the pending matters right now are currently stayed because of the involvement of another agency that has some jurisdiction over a portion of it. But that stay will probably be lifted soon off of all of those matters, and so then that's part of the 10 hearings that we'll probably have. But yes. We would handle it internally insofar as there are just specifically Newcastle County Ethics Code violations. If there are potential or real violations of other of state or other codes, they get involved, other agencies get involved.
And just to follow up, I believe when you were here last time that you said that there was a stay through the election cycle so that these did not become political. Is that correct?
That was true. That wasn't the basis of the stay, however. It was coincidental
Councilwoman Diller.
Yes.
And then Councilman Powell.
Just very quickly, Councilman Weiner and I are co-chairs of boards and commissions, and if there are any changes that you feel that need to be made, feel free to talk with us, and we'll set a time for this conversation to happen so that other people can attend.
Thank you.
As well.
Councilman Powers.
Yes. Just looking at, you know, your graph and what was brought up when you were speaking to Penn, I just have to, you know, you only had a few in a year, and maybe you need to put a time limit when somebody can go, because you're averaging probably 17 for the past 3 years.
Right.
You know, and if somebody's got a problem, they should say that they have a problem. How far back are these going back years? Or?
No, 15. Actually, 15. They're all certainly within the 5 year, but there were some that went forward that were maybe 2.5 years old when they were filed. But the event that they're complaining of was something that was more than 2 years ago.
And just to clear the air on the record, I will yield to the co-chairs, the boards and commissions, but I'm certainly willing to work with you if I can be of assistance. Council President Nagel.
Yes, I just wanted to say, you were brought up about being some of these complaints could potentially be go to court. But what I see, that this is saving us money. Some of these complaints that may, if this wasn't available, a venue for them, could potentially be filed as a court case against the county, and we would be then paying out potentially settlements. So this seems like a better way to go, is to help you do this rather than potentially paying out settlements that we wouldn't normally be paying out.
We'd love to.
Without knowing the merits of the charges, we can't make that determination.
Right. Yeah.
I know, I don't know enough. I don't have. Okay. Any other questions of any members of council? Okay. Councilman Street.
I'm going to be brief because no need of me picking a fight I can't win. And there's nothing new about me being the one when the vote is 12-1. I have some concern about almost $500,000 being spent on investigators and investigations. And I don't see where there's an opportunity for people who are not already involved to become involved. I think that's just totally unfair. Look at that versus with the previous administration, this council purposely and intentionally handcuffed that administration and had put everything out to bid for $25,000 or more. So in terms, I have some concern about inclusion, and it's just a matter of fundamental fairness in terms of process and opportunity for people to make this happen. Now,
quite honestly, Council.
Will the Council be the little Council? Like you about 12-1. I ain't mad at you. I'm glad everybody's singing Kumbaya. God bless America.
Well, quite honestly, I think you heard around the table, your concerns are our concerns, which is why the co-chairs of the boards and commissions are going to take a look at changing and opening this process up, hopefully, in the future. Going, going, gone. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next on the agenda is the grant requests at Newcastle Public Library. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Newcastle Library, as many of us know, are one of three contracted libraries in the 12th District. They provide a tremendous service. They have a tremendous group of friends of the library, as well as the town. And I focus on the fact that they are committed to strengthen and continue their summer reading programs. And they put in their narrative to help prevent summer slide. And as we, many of us know, when you look at education, sometimes our youth have a tendency during the summer months not to continue programs to keep their reading skills and abilities and talents up to where they need to be before they go back to school. They term it Building a Better World. They have a summer feeding program for both the younger children and the teens. And what I applaud is the fact that they have went to the part of including teenagers, writing workshops, cookie decorating, and they have speakers come in from various museums and everything. But I think if there's anything in here that coincides with what we're faced today, especially during the summer months, the heat of the summer, and our youth not having anything to do, it states near they have alternatives for summer activities in a safe place. And I think that's so crucial and critical, and it coincides with a lot of our summer programs that the county has. They're requesting for 1,000. I would ask for council's support in providing that out of my grant funding. I will, as I did last year, come back towards the end of the fiscal year, and if I have funds left in my budget, I'll be coming back to ask that we do like we did last year and up the ante another $1,500 so that they get a total of $2,500 for their summer youth reading programs and summer youth programs.
Okay, we have a motion for $1,000. Is there a second? Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Not voting. Okay, next, expense and revenue roundtable. Anything under? Can I get a motion? We have other in the gallery.
So I have Brian Maxwell, Chief Financial Officer. There were questions that were asked during the capital budget briefing, and so I have a handout here that addresses the questions. So I just want to make sure everybody had these in advance, well in advance of any questions that you may have. Okay. So I just wanted to hand those out, and obviously the Office of Finance is willing to answer any follow-up questions. One other piece of good news is I received an email while I was in here that Moody's Investment Services has confirmed the county's AAA bond rating for our upcoming sale, so I wanted to share that with everybody.
I would urge council members to review the information being provided. If you have any questions, you can forward them to Mr. Maxwell or ask finance, and we will place it on the next agenda. Okay, anything else under other?
Yes.
Councilman Bell.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, as I mentioned yesterday in the public safety budget hearing, I attended the Volunteer Firefighters Association meeting at Volunteer Hose in Middletown and presented the $3,000 check towards their initiative with the Special Olympics. I make it a practice that when we're making presentations such as that, if the council folks are not in attendance that contributed, I did mention on the floor that myself, along with Councilman Street, Hollins, Kilpatrick, Woods, and Powers, all contributed to making that happen for them to compete in the over the edge competition this year. So, just want to mention it.
Okay.
We make sure that everyone knows everyone's
participation. Thank you very much. And I apologize. I neglected to put on the record that Councilman Woods had joined us during the process. And in order to solidify that, Councilman Woods, would you like to take us home with a motion to adjourn?
Oh, before.
It's not even wine. I tried.
Yes. I just want to thank Chrissy Kessler's aid for keeping us all on track for the prom at Nemours Prom each year. And we all saw the great article in the paper. It should warm all our hearts that we helped those.
That leaves me out.
You're included.
The heart process.
No, you're included in all of it.
Okay. With that, Councilman Woods, take us home.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. Land use is in 14 minutes ago.